when it came to restaurant promoters.
Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find that open door? You're looking at the matrix shit. Let's go hook him up! I want to drag you until I wear your Texas ass out. The game is awesome to play. And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host Ed in San Antonio, and I'm first joined by my co-host Katrera, who owes the listeners who listen live an apology.
For what?
For fucking setting the show at the wrong goddamn time, and also you need to apologize to me for waking my ass up because I started getting texts asking me where the hell I am. I gotta jump out of bed, trying to dial the phone, trying to load my laptop. I get ready to, I'm fucking 2 seconds into an intro and then the show ends. So, apologize to the listeners. Well, he got mad and he hung up. So, we have our other co-host on the line. Craig, what's going on, Craig?
Not much. That's too bad that you stole my gimmick tonight. I was thinking about doing that myself. Yeah.
And I also have a bone to pick with you, Craig.
Sure you do.
Yeah, because I listened back to last week's show, and, you know, it was the part where we were kind of discussing the WWE and Hulk Hogan and Kerry Von Erich, and I made a comment about Kerry Von Erich and Hulk Hogan being the biggest stars in wrestling. And you kind of, with your snotty little attitude, I listened to it, I heard it, and your snotty little voice, you're all, okay, I just let you have that one. And, I want to ask you, did you happen to listen to Dave Meltzer and Michael Schiaparelli later on that night?
No.
Oh, you did? Well, if you did, you would have heard Dave Meltzer say exactly what I said, 10 times more about Kerry Von Erich being and Hulk Hogan being the biggest stars in wrestling. And I want you to know that, you know, that's not just from biased me, that's from Dave Meltzer. So, you know,
you are wrong about that.
You're wrong, and I am right.
Where did Dave Meltzer grow up again?
In California.
Oh, that's right, Texas. No, you're in Texas.
He was in Texas for like a year or two. He grew up in California.
Okay.
So, anyway, Chitra, are you back on the line here?
Are you ready to talk to me like a human being?
I guess.
Okay, we'll talk.
Okay.
What do you want?
I guess we should get started on the show then.
Let's get started on the show.
It's
through cussing me.
Yeah.
For simple mistake. So.
I'm sorry, I hurt your feelings, Katrera.
I just don't like being cussed at for doing a little simple mistake that didn't hurt nobody. I'm sorry you had to wake up an hour before the show.
It hurt me because I almost killed myself trying to get to the other room.
Oh, well, that would have been a mercy kill.
I'm the most agile person in the
world. I apologize for setting the time wrong. No need to be called a stupid motherfucker and all that shit.
I hear that, but I guess.
Yeah, but it's more fun when I do it my way. But anyway,
well,
if you apologize,
would you like a vial of blood? I can send it to you.
That's going a little too far. But now that you apologize, I guess we can go ahead and get on with the show. We're doing part two from last week's show. Because,
why were you berating Craig there? What did he do?
Oh, I said some snide remark about Gary Von Erich, and he got his panties all in a wad.
Oh.
You know how he does.
Well, you should talk bad about the greatest wrestler who ever lived.
Mm. Who, Ric Flair? What did you say about Ric Flair?
I didn't say anything
about
Shamo.
Gary Von Erich. Ric Flair is like maybe two, maybe three.
Yeah.
He is in my world.
Ever died, maybe.
That's the only world that counts.
He was the best wrestler with one foot I ever saw, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's way better than Zach Gallen.
He was a trailblazer. He went to Kentai. Only had one foot.
Right. Is that what happened to him? Anyway.
Mm-hmm. And he's brain damaged.
I'll teach him to run off from Fritz. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we are running down a history of the WWF/WWE world title. And last week we ended our show with Ric Flair winning the 30-man over-the-top Royal Rumble in 1992. So when you last joined us, that is where we left off. We will start off with WrestleMania 8 in Indianapolis, Indiana, April 5th, 1992. Randy Savage pinned world champion Ric Flair to win the title at 18 minutes and 1 second with a roll-up using the tights for leverage. And Miss Elizabeth, yes, late in the bout, Miss Elizabeth came to ringside to support Savage, despite a number of officials, including Shane McMahon, asking her to return backstage. A furious Flair kissed Elizabeth before he was slapped by her and attacked Savage until the officials could pull Savage away.
I just thought it was
great.
I thought it was just so-so. I really didn't think it was all that great, honestly. And I guess I was mainly more disappointed that I never got to see any naked pictures of Miss Elizabeth.
Like you were expecting that?
No, but I, you know, had hopes, you know. I was thinking dream, Kenny.
Well, even back then when I was young, I knew they weren't going to put no naked pictures of Elizabeth up there.
Wait, what? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said I knew they were not going to have any pictures of Elizabeth hanging from the Hoosier Dome.
Yeah.
Like I say, a guy can dream, you know.
Well, it's a stupid dream to have. Go back and watch SummerSlam 88. Get out of your system. You know?
There you go. Yeah, those panties were very, very modest compared to my idea.
They were the granny panties that somebody brought out the other night.
It was like the bottom of a bikini.
But you know what's funny is, like, you know, we're kind of laughing at what she was wearing that night, but at that time, I mean, really, that was the most skin you ever actually saw, except for maybe Woman when she was doing the Fallen Angel gimmick.
Or when Velvet McIntyre missed that splash on Moolah at WrestleMania 2. Her boobs almost popped out.
Yeah. And then you went fast forward into the 90s and you got the cat flashing every man in my living room.
Or Missy Hyatt Pro Wrestling Illustrated centerfold.
Right. Or
Jacqueline got naked one time by accident, I think.
Oh, probably three or four times.
Or she was dancing during a bikini contest and something popped
out.
But
something did make an appearance, yes. Oh, there it is, shriveled raisinette. Anyway.
It's chocolate chip.
Chocolate chip, that works too. All right. Moving right along. September 1st, 1992, Hershey, Pennsylvania. WWF Superstar Tapings. Yes, this happened. WWF Primetime Wrestling on the 14th of September, 1992. Ric Flair pinned the world champion Randy Savage with a figure four to win the title. It said pinned WWF champion with a figure four.
It happens, Craig, because sometimes you pass out from the pain and you lay back and the ref counts the three
okay.
count, and that's how you get out without actually giving up. You should know that.
Thank you for being the voice of reason. After the match, Razor Ramon attacked Savage on the floor. Razor returned to the ring after the match to attack Savage. The Ultimate Warrior carried Savage backstage after Razor left.
Yeah, this was the match where they weren't doing what Vince wanted, so Bobby Heenan came out and stopped the match, and they went back to the dressing room, and they came back out and had the rest of the match. Bobby Heenan came out and told them to stop the match and go backstage. They went backstage. Vince yelled at him because they weren't doing what he wanted them to do. I don't know what he wanted them to do, but they weren't doing it. So he sent them back out there to do what he wanted, and they finished the match.
Interesting.
Never heard that story.
I actually never heard that story before.
Yeah, it's a pretty famous story.
I mean, I practically forgot that he wanted a superstar taping.
Yeah. It was like a few days after SummerSlam, you know, when they had injured the knee in the match with the Ultimate Warrior, and they were doing the whose corner is Mr. Perfect going to be in for the match. You remember that whole big deal?
There.
Vaguely. But yeah, this mm-hmm. this happened during the match, and they even went back to the ring, went back to the back, and they got yelled. I don't know if they stopped the match and then like started fresh, or they just stopped. Went back out there and started where they stopped or what the fuck they did.
You guys brawled
in the ring. That was a pretty famous story.
Well, I mean, I guess at that time they could do it because there's no Twitter, there's no internet, there's no Facebook, and, you know, only those fans are going to tell the people in that city. So
only people
are going to
know
it
in the Observer or in that city. So.
Yeah, and I'm sure like Pro Wrestling Illustrated wouldn't have covered it. I mean, obviously they didn't, or else I wouldn't known about it, but. But I understand like it's coming right after SummerSlam, but it's still a superstar taping. I mean, they never gave shit away like that, you know.
Well, they didn't really. It's not like they did it like, hey, this week on Superstars we're having Randy Savage against Ric Flair, you know, for the title. It's one they taped there in that arena, and they showed later after it happened because they came back the next week and said this match happened. Here at Hershey Park Arena, and next week on Primetime Wrestling, we're going to show you the match in its entirety. It wasn't like during the course of the national TV show, you know, the match took place.
Okay. Well, I will say this about, you know, this show. It's the title change is all cool, well and good, but what I'm really curious and I want to go back and see is actually the Ultimate Warrior carrying Randy Savage out. That has to be a sight.
Yeah, he picked him up in his arms because they were the best of friends to the end or something like that by that point. So.
They were the very best friends?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you know,
after any SummerSlam match.
That anybody could ever have?
Sorry. I guess so. Maybe not better than Hogan and Beefcake. Although that may be more gay relationship.
Thank you for perpetuating the rumors.
According to Hogan's wife,
yeah.
Or did she retract
it? Yeah, I believe her.
I forgot.
She's a bitter old hag.
Yeah. I mean, you remember when he was on Primetime Wrestling, Beefcake, and Bobby Heenan was putting it for Drainer Manning in someone's face?
No.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's pretty funny.
Huh.
That's the only reason Hogan came to keep him around so he can get... You know, he had fun with him at parties.
Sure.
Like how we're thankful at Christmas.
Right.
You know the old slogan, a room full of Coke is a room full of friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, moving right along. In Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. That's in Canada, eh? It's October 12th. Canada, that's what I said. It's right up the road from me. Where, Lance Sturm lives. Anyway.
Lance Sturm. He's Howard's cousin.
That's right. October 12th, 1992, WWF Superstars tapings. Bret Hart defeated the WWF World Champion Ric Flair via submission with the sharpshooter, 26 minutes and 29 seconds. That sounds like an excellent match.
Oh, this was actually, like, up to this point. This is maybe the most shocking title change I remember.
Did they even show it? I don't remember seeing it.
I don't think they showed. I know they showed it, like, on one of those, Super Saiyans or something.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm sure they probably showed at the end or him with the title, but as far as the whole match, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen that whole match.
I think it was on, like, one of those Coliseum Video Super Tapes or something like that they put it on. So, I think that's where they aired. I think it was, like, a very last-minute thing, so. I wasn't expecting Bret Hart to, I mean, the next week they came out and said Bret Hart won the world title. I said, what the fuck?
Yeah, that was a big surprise. I mean, because Bret was, you know, he had a good run of the Intercontinental title, and he was having great matches. But, I mean, that was, like, a major jump. That's like he skipped a couple spots and just kind of all of a sudden was, like, the champion. I mean, it was a big surprise, but it was cool because it was different, and you needed to actually get to see really good matches in the main event instead of just the middle of the card.
Yeah, it was a big change because, you know, since I started watching WWE, it had been Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, you know, Ultimate Warrior type guys. So it was a big deal to see him win the title. I thought maybe somebody died or something.
Well, didn't he get it because Flair was leaving?
Well, I think also too because I think Warrior had injured Flair, like in one of those matches they had. He had to take a little time off. Like that inner ear thing he always had, do you remember that? He had like an inner ear problem.
Yeah, I know you're talking.
Part of it started with working with the Ultimate Warrior. Lord knows how.
Couldn't help.
He took a clothesline or God knows what from him. And he was having some problems, so he took the title off of him. And plus, the whole steroid thing was coming up, so he was changing his stuff around, you know, at that point.
It was an obvious thing to do. I mean, I shouldn't say obvious. It was a good thing to do. The Intercontinental Championship was always like the working man's title, and those guys were always having great matches. And I don't know about you, but I always, you know, thought of the Intercontinental title at that time way more prestigious than the WWF World title.
Yeah. And
Like the Intercontinental title was big, like early on, and then it kind of like died down a little bit. But then when Bret became the champion, it was like for the next few years it was a stepping stone. Everybody who became champion got the Intercontinental title before Shawn Michaels, you know, a few other people. So it was actually when Bret became world champion, that made the belt more prestigious because it was finally like what it was. It was the Intercontinental was number two, so now number two made it to number one. So, you know, it meant something. But now, you know, the title basically just a prop.
The Intercontinental title is like the world title now, in a way. You know, like Ziggler's title?
Yeah.
The world title is kind of like a high-end Intercontinental title, like a secondary championship.
Yeah.
People say it doesn't mean anything, but then when the guy they like wins it, it's like he won this big world title when he really hasn't, but whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And it was like the month after, you remember it was the month after the Shawn won the title from, IC title from David Boy Smith, and then David Boy and Warrior got fired because, you know, they were getting rid of those guys.
That was the one on Saturday night's main event, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the one, the DVD that Brian had the audacity to say sucked.
What's the 39 main event DVD?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, what a moron.
I was gobsmacked because he was talking about it. And then he started reading down the list of the matches, and he goes, actually, that sounds pretty good. Yeah, no crap, stupid. Anyway.
Yeah, well, it's nice to know that you can see the part of Brian that is just a total idiot asshole.
No.
And that was the last good thing on Saturday night's main event when they went to Fox.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
It's kind of like the end.
Yeah. Okay,
the
moving
real
along.
The real thing that kills Saturday Night's Main Event is when they stopped using Animotion as the theme song. Firmly believe.
Duly noted. Duly noted. Okay, one of my...
The next month, you were talking about the title matches. Like the next month at the Survivor Series, they had like an awesome match, Brett and Shawn. Probably the best match they had, like on pay-per-view, I think. At the Survivor Series.
Hmm.
Wait, which one?
The match that they had at Survivor Series was like champion versus champion, but it was just a world title on the line.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody remembers that match. Everybody's so enthused.
I only remember the Saturday Night's Main Event match. I don't remember that.
And
one
after the match, Santa Claus came out.
Oh, well, good for him.
And snow fell from the ceiling.
Oh. I'm sorry, Chair. I don't remember that at all.
Sometimes the shit that happens, that just the stupid bullshit like that, is sometimes the best stuff that happens.
Yeah, it's Christmas time, you know.
Yeah. Santa Claus and ho-ho-ho, I gotcha.
Yeah.
All right, let's do this. One of my greatest memories of wrestling, WrestleMania 9, Las Vegas, Nevada, at Caesar's Palace. Show opened up with JR wearing a toga.
And Bobby Heenan coming out backwards on a camel.
Yeah.
And Randy Savage coming out on the sedan with the Vestal Virgins.
That's right. But Jim Ross, the voice of professional wrestling, was on my TV wearing a toga. Unbelievable.
Well, I don't know why
it was weird.
This is like one of the greatest things that I ever saw in my whole life. I mean,
it was one
of the best WrestleManias ever, dude. Jim Ross and
I did like this WrestleMania. A lot of people don't, but I did.
Jim Ross in a toga, you know, Bobby Heenan just, as stupid as it sounds, Bobby Heenan riding a camel backwards was funny as shit, and
mm-hmm.
that whole get-up, that whole gimmick was just the greatest.
All right, so we had two title changes in this one show. The Egomaniac came back at the end of the show. We'll discuss that in a minute. Yokozuna pinned WWF champion Bret Hart to win the title 8 minutes and 56 seconds after Fuji threw salt in Hart's eyes as he applied the sharpshooter.
I remember being very pissed off when we got off to Yokozuna.
Sure. Hogan came out to tell Earl Hebner what had happened. Moments later, Fuji issued Hogan an immediate challenge, eventually offering up the title. It wasn't until Hart encouraged him to do so that Hogan accepted. Sure, that's really what happened. Hogan pinned WWF champion Yokozuna to win the title after a clothesline and a leg drop. It was about 23, 24 seconds.
And then I went from being pissed off to even more pissed off.
Right.
I used to like this. I didn't mind it so much. I'm a Hulk maniac.
Wow. Who isn't?
What's funny about this is I didn't know. I actually listened to this match on WSB on the Jim Ross radio show. He was doing for WCW in my car.
Really?
You remember the show that he would do on Sunday nights, WCW show? He would always plug it on like the TV shows. And I was actually able to pick it up in my car in Mississippi, like on some nights. So I was out there listening, and they just played like the entire last hour of the show on the radio. It was weird.
Huh. Interesting.
Because I didn't have pay-per-view at that time, so
sure.
That was the only way I was going to hear it as it was happening. So
I'm surprised they had car radios at that time in Mississippi.
Please.
That's a stupid thing to say.
Okay, I'm going to break the tension.
Live in Texas, Nimrod.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we're more advanced than Mississippi.
Yeah, you got all those people jumping over the border. Yeah, you're really whatever.
Yeah, we kind of do all the shit for us. They do all the shit I don't want to do.
Well, you can get over it.
To be honest, they're jumping in.
And they have some fucking awesome food.
Okay. You like your Rick and Vernon?
There's a lot of anger here tonight. King of the Ring, 1983, Dayton, Ohio.
1983.
That's what I said, 1993.
Oh, I said 83.
No, I probably did. Just like I...
There was a King of the Ring in 1983. You want to know the results?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. It wasn't until 85.
King of the Ring, 1993, June 13th. Yokozuna pinned Hulk Hogan at 13 minutes and 10 seconds. Turn off your Facebook there, Ed. To win the title following a belly-to-belly, belly-to-back suplex, and a leg drop. Get this. After a photographer at ringside shot a fireball into the champion into Hogan's face, although it was revealed on television, it was Harvey Whippleman in a costume acting as a photographer.
Yeah.
Hogan's last appearance on TV for 9 years.
This was a horrible finish.
You don't say. A fireball.
A fireball from like the ball. How close was he even to Hogan when it went off?
He was on the apron, so, you know, just kind of, I don't even know, it looked like one of them old-ass cameras you had to use a crank on or something, I don't know.
It looked like the ones you'd see from, like, if you're watching a movie from the old times, and they have to have,
like the old West or something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like they actually have to light it to, like, take the picture or something.
Yeah, and, like, the whole room goes blind from the flash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is terrible.
Yeah, it was not good. All right, WrestleMania 10, New York City, Madison Square Garden.
Well, you don't want to talk about why he dropped the title to Yokozuna.
Because he didn't want to drop it to Brett because he's little.
Right. Yeah, Brett was that little at that point. That's always so stupid.
Yeah. But that's why
I bet anybody in WCW a year later is going to care. You know, that you fucking lost to Bret Hart. Sorry.
Yeah, you would think. WrestleMania 10. Go ahead.
I just was starting to count on how many times we interrupt Craig because I can hear Craig's frustration over the airways. But go ahead, Craig.
WrestleMania 10, New York City, Madison Square Garden, March 20th, 1994. Bret Hart pinned the WWF World Champion Yokozuna to win the title 10 minutes, 33 seconds after the champion lost his balance while attempting the bonsai drop.
That's another weird finish.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing this move for 2 years and all of a sudden he falls.
Well, he was bad.
And like it was going to hurt his fat ass. You know what I mean? So much cushioning. How is it going to hurt?
He landed on his back.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And he banged his cerebellum on the canvas.
Well, they kind of had to do this finish because it was like, did Brett actually put Yokozuna in a sharpshooter?
No, he didn't do anything to him off the end of this match. He was coming off the Owen loss, and I think they worked with like a knee injury or something in there. So. When Brett lost that first match, I know exactly what was going to happen at the end of the night, though. Kind of obvious.
This is midway through the match. Piper knocked out Cornette with a punch after Cornette tried to interfere. After the match, Yokozuna chased surprised guest referee Rowdy Piper backstage while Hart was congratulated by Lex Luger.
And Burt Reynolds.
The WWF IC champion Razor Ramon, Sparky Plug, Tatanka, Piper, Randy Savage and the 1-2-3 Kid, Burt Reynolds, Ron Shearer.
Was it Marky Mark or was it the other one?
Or Donnie Wahlberg. My bad.
KOTB.
The other Wahlberg.
I just remember Burt Reynolds was all fired up and his head was broken.
Because he got mugged. He got the mugger or something.
Uh-huh. And all I know is if I was Bret Hart, I'd be like, fuck all of y'all, bring on Ronda Shearer's big titties over here.
Oh, jeez.
That's gross.
She was hot.
She was a
mess. She was up all night.
Yeah.
Remember that show they had on USA Network?
I watched every commercial, right before every commercial and after every commercial break.
Joe Bob Briggs is better.
How many commercials in an evening there, Ed?
A lot.
Yeah? You good for one go-around every commercial?
No,
here. It's a little longer than that. Survivor Series 1994, San Antonio, Texas. Ed, were you there?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I was there. I was like 14 years old. I was sitting behind three rednecks. One of them who looked like he seriously just walked right out of the swamp. Another one kind of looked normal but sounded 10 times more southern than Contreras. And the third one was, I don't know if it was their mom or an aunt or what, but it was an older lady who was blind. And her eyes were open and going like different directions, it seemed like. And they were like the weirdest people ever. And they were literally screaming and yelling that the guy had the really, really country-looking one was yelling during the whole Bret Hart match that he had money on Bret and please don't lose because he can't afford to lose the $50 that he bet on him.
Hold on. Back the truck up. A blind woman was at a wrestling event.
Yes, dude. An old, fat, hick woman with gray, curly gray hair, and her eyes were like, so she was blind, dude, and her eyes were like, you know.
Sure.
That would do it. Swear to God, she was blind. She was blind. And the funniest part is, like, every time Jerry Lawler came up, the one dude would scream, get him, Jerry. And then he'd be like, that's talking to him. He hears me. He knows what I'm saying.
They didn't want to leave Mama at home, or they just had an extra $40 to shell out for a seat for the blind woman?
I guess.
Mom would have to keep her ass at the house. I mean, taking Mama's blind ass to the Brooklyn matches. Let's go to the movie next.
She kept asking what was going on. And the one guy, he's losing, come on, Brett. And he just would start yelling about his
$50. Oh, God, that was for 8 fucking minutes. Lord knows she's probably flipping out. That was the most boring thing I've ever watched in my life.
Oh, my God. It was
that's
great.
Like all the deaf people I see at concerts. Anyway, Bob Backlund with Owen Hart defeated the WWF champion Bret Hart with Davey Boy Smith to win the title 34 minutes and 44 seconds.
Eight minutes was it? Crawl space chicken wing.
Yeah.
Greatest finisher of all time.
This was a horrible match.
If Brock Lesnar would have used the crossface chicken wing in the UFC, he'd still be champion today.
So the gimmick in this match was the participant's second had to throw in the towel to end the match. And Stu and Helen Hart were shown in the front row. During the contest, Bret's wife Julie and her kids were shown watching from the balcony. At the 25-minute mark, Smith was knocked out while chasing after an interfering Owen Hart around the ring. Moments later, Owen appeared to cry as Bret was caught in the cross-faced chicken wing. Owen then pleaded with his parents sitting at ringside to stop the match, and eventually Helen threw in the towel.
Guys bitch about watching what's his name be in the hold for 8 minutes. I don't know why you're bitching about that, because while that was going on, there were 8 awesome moments of Owen Hart fucking crying and begging his mom to throw in the towel. It was one of the greatest performances of Owen Hart's career. It was awesome.
I would have been satisfied with 4 minutes.
That wasn't enough to get the full dramatic of the situation.
Uh-huh.
And then Helen just took the towel. Took the towel and threw it. Didn't like Stu try to even try and stop her?
He snatched it away. Like he said, "Give me that, bitch."
He
threw it in.
He was so slow that he's still throwing the towel in.
Yeah.
He's still trying to stop her to this day.
He said, "Give me that towel, woman."
No.
I also remember from that show, Chuck Norris fucking kicked the shit out of Jeff Jarrett, dude.
Yeah, he was a special troubleshooting ref in the casket match with Undertaker and Yokozuna.
Mm-hmm.
And they had an awesome, like, eight-man with the Doink and the Dinks and the King and the Little Kings. I remember that. That was
Easy Queasy and the other dude.
Huh?
That was a great show. I'm so glad I went to that one.
That's one where Sean, like, kicked Diesel in the face and he got pissed off, and that's where they broke up. Which
yeah.
I think led to the next week, the next title change.
That's a segue, Craig.
Oh, okay. Because usually when you give me a segue, somebody pipes in. Does anybody want to interrupt? Okay, good.
And you know that, never mind.
I know. I was waiting for that. New York, Madison Square Garden, November 26, 1994. Diesel, who is subbing for one Bret Hart, pinned the WWF champion Bob Backlund to win the title following a powerbomb. Matter of seconds.
8 seconds.
Yeah.
Biggest travesty and justice ever for that title.
Thank Christ I didn't have to sit through a title reign by Bob Backlund in 1994.
Oh, like watching the title reign of Kevin Nash was that much better.
And I was more entertained, I can tell you that much.
You guys hear him on the Steve Austin show this week?
No, was he on there? I thought Terry Funk
yeah.
was going to be on there. Is that next week?
I think it's next week.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty good. He's still full of crap, believe it or not.
What do they talk about? They talk about, like, mostly wrestling stuff? Or...
I talked about a lot of the... didn't get into a whole lot, actually, but it was only about maybe 40 minutes. Talked about the Master Blaster gimmick, Vinny Vegas, and him going to Arn and saying that his wife was going to leave him if he didn't get out of the business and this and that and the other thing. And so, of course, the story he told was as soon as they let him out of his contract, he ran to WWF and started in 2 weeks later with Sean and this and that. So, I mean, it's good, so.
You talk about, like, you know, you talk about, like, a total change in careers because, I mean, he was absolute dog shit in fucking WCW. I mean.
Also, kind of, you could say the same thing, like, about Razor Ramon.
Yeah, I was about to say that. It's like I was kind of to say who actually had the bigger career increase, but I'd have to say I think Razor Ramon was actually ahead of fucking Vinny Vegas in WCW.
Yeah, he was like a little bit upper mid card, but still, you know.
You know that right before he left, though, wasn't that I think Nash and DDT were actually like kind of starting to become like a little bit of a decent team.
Yeah, they were. They were teaming, and then he teamed. Remember when he teamed with Big Sky?
With fucking Sabretooth.
Yeah, he was Michael Myers.
Oh, wow.
He was
Mike Myers.
Yeah, he was Michael Myers, too. And they teamed for a while, and then Nash left in, like, the summer of 93, and then he just showed up on, I think, after Sean lost the Intercontinental title to Marty Jannetty, he won it back at a house show when Diesel made his debut, and that's a good example of how a change of scenery and promotion will get you over, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Razor Ramon, like I said.
And basically,
you know, two of the bigger stars of the 90s.
Yeah. And the thing with Diesel was like, it was a change of scenery, and then it was like really one match that really put him over the Royal Rumble because he went in there and he whooped everybody's ass and just put on a hell of a show. And that really got him over. But, I mean, I'll never forget. I will never, ever, ever forget when Oz made his debut and you had freaking Dorothy and Toto and the fucking Scarecrow and the Iron Dude and Kevin Nash came out with, like, flour in his hair or something because you could just see it kind of, like, coming off his hair.
He had a mask on, was like he was 200 years old.
Yeah. And then
Kevin Sullivan was dressed up as the wizard, and he was running around saying, "Welcome to Oz, welcome to Oz." I watched that, and that was like one of the most embarrassing things I've ever seen in pro wrestling. And I've seen a lot of embarrassing things.
And then after all of that, he did the job to Ron Simmons.
No, he didn't.
Are you sure? Because I'm pretty sure I saw him lose to Ron Simmons.
He beat Tim Powerhouse Parker in 1 minute and 1 second.
Oh, well, it was a long time ago.
It was at the Great American Bash where he did the job to Ron Simmons.
Oh, okay.
But there was no Tin Man. He had got fired.
Well, he was probably on the juice.
Gosh, Ed, you're
Soto
so stupid.
Died.
Jeez. Rub it in. Blah. Okay.
That was back during the... Well, I like the Pia News stuff just because that was so damn funny.
Oh, that when he started crying? Remember when he started crying?
Well, I was just talking about his rapping.
Yo,
baby, yo, baby,
like,
yo.
When Vader fucking rammed his face into the middle, the thing outside, and fucking he started crying.
It was
and
Mr.
his
Hughes.
Face was getting bigger.
It was Mr. Hughes.
Well, whoever it was, that was fucking hilarious.
I'm telling you, it's Mr. Hughes.
You're on a roll tonight.
I was doing some serious drugs at the time, I'm sorry.
God, even back then, that was 92.
Yeah, I was like 20.
Jesus Christ. I just remember I loved the little commercials they would do for their pay-per-views, and Penn Nose would be the star of it. You'd be on there rapping.
Mm-hmm.
You'd do something like, word up, Nikita Koloff is going to be taking on Sting or something like that, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? I'm going to have to upload
were
one of those and we'll play them here on the show because that's some funny shit.
They were going to push that guy to the moon. They actually like had him on the cover of their like merchandise catalogs and stuff.
They had him. He was on the cover of the WCW magazine, Santa Claus, and Missy Hyatt was his helper or something. And I think nobody liked him and they stole his shoes in England and wouldn't give them back or something.
Yeah, but he didn't get half the push that Van Hammer got.
Yeah, that's another one. Oh, gosh. This is a whole show we could do on embarrassing shit from WCW.
And who is his, like, arch rival, JT Southern?
JT Southern, the other rocker. The one that got beat up by Cactus, that one Clash of the Champions when he was the drummer.
Yeah.
Anyway, continue with the topic. We got
okay, back on topic. Survivor Series 1995, Landover, Maryland? Yeah.
Maryland. Yeah, Washington.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah, thank you.
President
Clinton was there. I know geography. 1995, November 19th. Sorry. Bret Hart pinned WWF champion Diesel in a no DQ, no count out, no time limit match to win the title at 24 minutes, 51 seconds. An inside cradle after the champion attempted to powerbomb him.
I remember because this was like the first table spot I ever saw in WWF.
Yeah.
Because Brett was on the apron and then Diesel came over and he just knocked him off and he went through the table and went like snap. You know, the table just like imploded or something. It was awesome.
Yeah.
This was a pretty good match, I thought.
This is a really good event, as I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is one with the wild card match, you know, where they put all the heels and the baby faces together. It's like Shawn and Ahmed Johnson and Sid and the Bulldog against like Owen and Yokozuna and Razor Ramon and Dean Douglas or something like that. And they had the Japanese women. I think.
Which one?
Well, they had like eight of them. What was the thing
so
with the.
You're talking about the Survivor Series one, right?
Yes.
Yeah, this is one with Alundra Blaze and Bertha Faye, like Captain and Tame. Mm-hmm. And their other members were just all the Japanese women from, like, I guess All Japan Women or something.
Yeah, it was like Asia Khan was the main one, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then she wrestled on one of the other shows where she broke the girl's nose or something. And
with the backhand?
She back, because that was her move, the backhand. And
spinning backhand.
I think it was like the tiniest one. And she like broke her nose. But she was so awesome in this match that all the guys were like, what the fuck? We can't have her here. And they got rid of her.
So I know that they did show the promo or graphic for her and Alundra Blaze at the Royal Rumble for a title match. And then she showed up on Nitro with the title belt and threw it in the garbage.
Oops.
You know, they missed the boat on that because they could have some awesome matches with Alundra Blaze and Asia Khan. Or, like, let Asia Khan get the women's title and just beat the shit out of women. Because the Japanese women were over in WCW. I mean, you know, they really missed the ball on that one. And then WCW sure took advantage of it because, you know, the women actually did pretty good on WCW for a while until they made a Jim Ferrer, the, like, women's champion.
Who the women's champion?
That Vince Russo's friend, didn't he like...
No, he was the Cruiserweight champion.
Yeah, Cruiserweight champion, I'm sorry, that's what I meant. But like, wasn't he wrestling Medusa at the time?
Medusa won the Cruiserweight title from Evan Courageous during the whole Vince Russo nightmare.
Uh-huh.
And he was doing the Oklahoma thing with the Jim Ross face.
Yeah.
Was making
but like,
Jim
you know, for a while, I mean, Medusa, you know, she had those good matches with Bull Nakano. And when they brought in the other Japanese women for that short time, they actually had some badass matches. I mean, you know, it was a shame we didn't get to see more of Asia Khan.
Mm-hmm.
Or Asia Khan.
Asia Khan, whatever.
Yeah. WrestleMania 12, Anaheim, California, at the Arrowhead Pond, March 31st, 1996. Shawn Michaels defeated WWF World Champion Bret Hart in an Iron Man match. It originally went, of course, the full 60 minutes, and neither man was awarded a fall. However, the match was restarted by Gorilla Monsoon. Michaels hit two super kicks in sudden death to win the title at 1 minute and 53 seconds.
I was disappointed by this match.
Really?
Yeah.
It was not a bad match.
It was just... When you think about the concept with the two guys in it, I mean, you're thinking like one of the greatest matches ever. And I mean, it was a great match. I know a lot of people like think it's this horrible match, which I don't. But I mean, it just didn't live up to what I think it could have.
It was supposed to be the next generation Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat, Broadway Dance, and it sure as hell wasn't. It was.
Yeah, I'd rather them gone out there and just like done a 60-minute draw without me knowing they were about to go 60 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then just like doing like overtime or something. So
the thing that actually hurt this match was the lack of pinfalls.
Yeah.
So
tell at one point they were going with no pinfalls just by the way they were working the match. I mean, the biggest spot in this match was when the poor timekeeper got killed with the super kicker ringside.
I mean, the match had some great moments, and the pacing was very good. I really liked the match, but it would have bumped it up to a next level if Shawn would have been one pinfall behind up to the 60-minute mark, and then...
Or at least just one and one, you know?
You sure?
The match. You know, each guy has one, and you got, like, I don't know, like 30 minutes to go, so who's going to take the next one?
Sure.
Well, they thought it'd be more dramatic going into the overtime, but yeah, it might be dramatic for the overtime, but not for the other 60 minutes. I mean, this 60-minute match, this 60-minute match ain't shit to the Miami Toyota anyway 60-minute match. I mean, you talk about two girls who actually blew away the two top American wrestlers at the time, and I mean, that match... Like I say, it was okay, but I mean, that was one of the biggest disappointments I've ever seen. I mean, I was actually bored at times during the match. And I don't think I could ever say that about any other Shawn Michaels match I've ever seen.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean, I was expecting so much more, expecting like one of those, you know, one of those matches of the ages or something like that for the ages, you know, one of those like Rick Steamboat and, like you said, Rick Steamboat and Ric Flair matches, and just didn't happen.
Yep.
They really didn't have any like really standout like on pay-per-view at least. Any memorable standout matches aside from like the Survivor Series 92 and of course the 97 one, but that was for a different reason than the quality of the match. So
Is that the Brett Shawn one? Is that when Shawn did the fucking gimmick where he came flying across the arena?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that's probably actually the most memorable thing about that whole WrestleMania show. The fucking Shawn's entrance is more memorable than the match itself.
I remember I was watching the true story of WrestleMania, and they showed footage of Vince doing that entrance before Shawn.
Yeah.
He was, like, trying it out. And Vince is just sliding down this big arena on this rope. It's funny.
I'm sure there are people who probably wish he would have done that before Owen did. But.
Well.
I'm not lying, but I'm sure there are people who feel that way. But go ahead, Greg.
Okay, we have Survivor Series 96, Madison Square Garden, November 17th. Psycho Sid pinned the WWF champion Shawn Michaels to win the title in 20 minutes with a powerbomb after hitting the champion with a video camera.
Yes, it was 24 hours after the November, ECW November, remember, where Terry Funk used a video camera like on Brian Lee in the main event. So
that's right.
And this is where the crowd turned on Shawn Michaels.
Yes, they did.
They booed the shit out of him.
Right, it was almost
it was
like Shawn Cena.
Something about Sid, one of those guys you just look at and just, I don't know, you want to cheer for some reason. I don't know. He just looks.
He's like the scariest looking man who ever lived. He's like fucking 6'8", fucking all jacked up. Got the face. His face looked like he did about fucking 3 8 balls of cocaine in a row, you know.
And he did legitimately almost stab a man to death.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Marty Lynn. He was a hell of a softball player, apparently.
Did you say Marty Lundy?
Yeah. What?
Did you say Marty Lundy?
I did.
No.
Oh. Okay, Brent Grimman.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my favorite Brent Grimman story that I will not revisit. But
yeah, I know, you told it like 10 times.
I know, he gets all riled up, and it just cracks me up. Every time I hear Sid's name, I think of that Jew in the front row waving the squeegee. Anyway.
The squeegee. Yeah, I was watching some of that old WCW in like 1991, and after Sid had left, and they said, here's Mike Graham, he's a squeegee man. Nobody knows why. Apparently he's back down some of the biggest men in pro wrestling, and he did it to somebody with a squeegee.
Good to know.
That was awesome.
All right. So
this is the one where at first he didn't he hit like Jose, and Jose like had a heart attack because of the theory.
I think so.
I think this is what happened to. Kind of get there was a whole controversy of the match. I think he hit Jose or something. May have first hit Jose with the camera, and then hit Shawn with it. I don't know. I know he powerbombed Shawn on the floor. He threw him in the ring, and then he hit him with the camera or something. I do remember Jose had the heart attack because he got hit or something like that during this match. And that was one of the big things.
Yeah. Yeah, I
never liked
Jose
in Shawn's corner. It just didn't work. It just didn't fit.
Well, it was a good idea, but it's a good idea to have like his mentor, like his, and maybe like in the vignettes. But as far as like being out there, it's like Jose didn't really do anything. I mean, he wasn't really that charismatic as Shawn's second or mentor or whatever.
Yeah, I think he had like what one. He and Shawn like maybe did a mixed match with Vader and Cornette or something like that, and that was about it. I think kind of dragged his popularity down a little bit, having him out there with him all the time, you know. So
that leads us to the Royal Rumble 1997, San Antonio, Texas, at the Alamo Dome.
Where I was on that.
I figured as much. Shawn Michaels pinned the WWF champion Psycho Sid to win the title 13 minutes, 49 seconds after hitting him twice with a video camera and then hitting the super kick.
And it was just okay because Shawn was actually like seriously
he had a flu
fever
or something.
Yeah, he had a bad fever. He almost didn't even do the match. And I remember that Alamo Dome, by the end, it was like one of the small side sections where only half of the upper deck wasn't sold, but everything else was fucking full. But it was actually a good deal. You could go to Taco Bell and buy a taco and get like a coupon to buy a ticket for the show for $5. And
at least they're playing to the demographic.
Yeah. And then, of course, they brought in all the Mexicans. That was awesome.
Was that when they were doing like the mini Vader?
Yeah.
That was right before. It's right before they started doing the mini Vader and the mini Goldust and the mini Mankind. And, yeah,
weren't
but
they
it was
part of that shotgun Saturday night?
No, it was still Mascarita Sagava that was on shotgun. So he hadn't changed the Max Mini yet. So, no, it was still.
Okay.
They were still doing the Mexican thing. But there was some serious talent on that show, man. I mean, you had like Octagon and Heavy Metal and
Mysterio.
You know, just a whole bunch. Jerry Estrada was out there. I mean, they had a. There was
Cibernetico.
A lot. Yes. Well, Cibernetico, let's see, who was in the room? Cibernetico, Latin Lover, Farrell Jr. Farrell Jr. and, of course, Mil Moscatos, who fucking was over like a motherfucker and fucking was all, he was, you know, he was only in the ring for like maybe 2 minutes, maybe a little more, but he was awesome and no one can deny that. He came in as a ball of fire and then did a flying body press off the top rope onto
he wouldn't let anybody throw him over the top rope.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But it was more dramatic that way. I mean, it was awesome. He
no,
was,
it wasn't.
I mean, fucking 70-something-year-old man fucking diving from the top rope to the outside onto dudes. It was awesome. You just don't like Mexicans, you bastards. But,
no, I just don't like Mexicans that are hard to work with.
Egomaniacs.
And are assholes.
Egomaniacs.
Okay.
Okay, continue.
Like Hulk Hogan's not an egomaniac, and Ric Flair's not an egomaniac, and Randy Savage ain't an egomaniac. You guys are racist. Damn. But,
you should have been born somewhere else. What can I tell you?
Yeah. But anyway, back to the point is he was still awesome in the match.
We the
and,
people.
that was funny. But and then the match they put on the show, it's funny because, like, The worst of all the, I don't even want to say worst because it was okay, but the weakest match of the Mexicans was the one they actually put on the pay-per-view. Because the other matches were awesome, and the pay-per-view one was just okay, but they put a couple of the wrong dudes in that main event.
Yeah, the Lucha match they had on Shotgun Saturday night was just out of this world good.
Yeah, that was crazy. And then, like you said, that led to all the mini characters, which were freaking awesome.
Wouldn't he find like a referee in a bunch of those matches or something?
Who?
Sonny?
Probably.
I think she was
so.
Reffing a bunch of those matches.
I think so, yeah. Okay. This leads us to In Your House, Final Four, Chattanooga, Tennessee, February 16th, 1997.
Hey, Shawn Michaels lost his smile before that. Had to give the title up.
So going one more quick thing about the Royal Rumble.
Sure.
Is,
you know
how they have, like, if you get like the first five rows, you get to keep the chair?
Sure.
Okay, well, they do that at
first five rows.
I don't think they do it at every show, but like at some shows, like if you buy the ringside, they're real expensive, you get to keep the chair. So we were like fourth row, so we got to keep our chairs. So at the end of the night, you had to wait there, and then they slowly, you know, unhooked them all, and they gave you your chair. So me and my buddy are walking back to my car with our chairs and a cop on a horse, because it was downtown. Alamodome's downtown, and they still have, like, cops on horses downtown. Fucking comes up to us and was fucking talking shit to us because he thought we stole the chair and he was getting ready to arrest us. And then we're like, sir, just came with the ticket. And then we told him to look around, and then he noticed, like, other people walking with the chair. So he let us go, but we were getting harassed by a horse police officer because he thought we stole the fucking chairs from the Alamo Dome.
Well,
he was white too, that fucking racist.
We should have been born white then. We the people.
Go ahead, Craig.
Okay, getting back to In Your House. February 16th, 1997. Bret Hart defeated Vader, The Undertaker, and Steve Austin in a Final Four elimination match.
It was either pinfall, I think, or over the top.
Mm-hmm. The best part about this match, and this match just would have been just okay, had Vader not flown face first into the steps and came up bleeding a gusher hard way. If Vader had not have been bleeding during this 24-minute match, it just would have been average at best, but this was a great match.
This made Vader look like he was Vader like back in WCW when he was actually a monster.
At one point, the bruising and the gash above his face was so massive, he tried to take the mask off, you know, his little string, you know, his mask, and it, like, got caught on the belt. Yeah, it was awesome.
That's pretty gross. But how did this match actually... Okay, because I remember after going back to the Rumble where Bret had actually won the Rumble, but Stone Cold got back in before the ref had saw him and he threw Bret out, so Stone Cold was declared the winner.
Yeah, well, he had been thrown out by Bret, and then he came in and he illegally eliminated Vader and Undertaker first, and then Bret.
Okay.
So they took him in. Remember, Bret quit the next night? That I quit because y'all are screwing me and all that bullshit. And
I remember that.
So Gorilla Monsoon made the four-way for the pay-per-view and said the winner goes to the gets the title match at WrestleMania. So,
mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
That's how that all came about.
Yeah.
Then it changed the next night after the four-way.
It sure did. Nashville, Tennessee. February 17th, 1997, Monday Night Raw. Psycho Sid pinned world champion Bret Hart with a powerbomb to win the title after Steve Austin interfered and hit the champion with a chair as Hart had applied the sharpshooter to Psycho Sid.
Yep. That'll do it.
That'll do it, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't much of a match, but it helped led to a lot of, like, really great TV coming up.
I remember it was like they tried to get that match started, like, three times. They tried to do it at the start of the show, and then Steve Austin interfered, and they in the middle of the show, they tried to do it again, and Austin jumped in there again, and then they finally got it at the end of the show. And I just remember this show was the one where Jerry Lawler went off on an ECW rant, Paul Heyman called in, said, "We'll be there next week." At the Manhattan
mm-hmm.
Center.
And they were?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that was an awesome show.
And it was. Leads us to WrestleMania 13, Chicago, Illinois, at the Rosemont Horizon, March 23rd, 1997. The Undertaker pinned WWF champion Psycho Sid to win the title 23 minutes and 54 seconds with the tombstone after Bret came along ringside and dropped Sid throat first over the top rope as Sid was attempting a powerbomb.
This match was boring as hell.
You don't say.
If they hadn't had like the Brett and Steve Austin I quit match, this might have been the worst WrestleMania of all time.
The sixth man was okay.
Yeah, it was okay.
But that was it.
Still, wasn't much to the show.
Yeah, but that Brett and Austin match, fucking that was worth the money alone, man. That match was fucking one of the best ever.
Good stuff. Until the main event. SummerSlam 1997, East Rutherford, New Jersey, August 3rd, 1997. Bret Hart pinned WWF champion The Undertaker to win the title 28 minutes and 8 seconds. Shawn Michaels was the guest referee. He accidentally hit Taker over the head with a steel chair that Hart had brought into the ring just a few seconds earlier. Hart spotted Michaels in the face. Michaels confronted him about it, about the weapon being in the ring. Sorry, I lost my face.
In his face, he hucked a big loogie in his mouth.
Yeah.
Jesus.
The stipulations before the bout stated if Hart did not win the title, he would never again wrestle in the U.S., and it, Michaels favored Taker throughout his officiating, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, we all know where this went.
He clearly did not favor Taker.
Yeah.
He smeared him with that chair at the end of it. Ugh.
Yeah.
That's when he turned heel, because all the fans turned on him.
Yeah, and he was wearing the tiniest shorts, as I remember.
With a sock in it.
Well, let's hope.
He stole that sword.
Well, no, that was during another match. That wasn't during when he was refereeing.
No.
That was like later. That was when he was refereed like the Rock and Triple H in that Ironman match. And wore those great smuggling shorts.
Yeah. They're like Daisy Duke shorts almost.
Yeah. That only he could get away with wearing.
Well, he did pull for a fucking playgirl.
Well, they paid him.
Yes, they sure did, and he sure took the gimmick and ran with wearing gay shit after that.
He was wearing gay shit before that, please.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's true. I mean, he had a Village People hat that they sold as merchandise.
Yeah.
Why not?
I'm sure Craig will want to
know. I'm wearing it right now. Survivor Series 1997, Montreal, Quebec, the Molson Center, November 9th. The WWF European Champion, Shawn Michaels, defeated the WWF World Champion, Bret Hart, to win the title 12 minutes and 11 seconds.
Nothing notable here.
No, this didn't change the course of history or anything. Of course, we all know the story about the Montreal screw job. Right?
Well, we do.
Not
really.
We do know.
Can you explain it to us?
Basically, Bret Hart did not want to drop the title in Canada. He wanted to drop it the next night on the road somewhere. But not in,
and also
not
just
in
didn't want to drop it to Shawn Michaels, basically.
True. As Shawn Michaels slapped on a sharpshooter of his own, Vince McMahon had made his way down the ringside. Earl, as soon as the sharpshooter was applied, called for the bell saying he submitted. Bret Hart lost his mind and figured he had been screwed.
Went directly to the back door and got in a car that was warmed up with his brother in the driver's seat.
That's right. Of course, we all know Bret screwed Bret. Right?
It was just some weird shit, man. I didn't know what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
And the best part is that somehow, some miracle, most of it got caught on tape.
Yeah.
Most of it. All of it.
Yeah.
I remember Vince limping out of Brett's dressing room, holding his face.
Yeah. I mean,
looking
like
embarrassed as hell.
On Wrestling with Shadows, they even caught, you know, interviews after the fact.
You can hear Shawn Michaels crying, and I had nothing to do with it, man. And you can see Triple H lying to Brett's wife is telling them off. And sadly, you don't see the punch, and sadly, you don't see the Undertaker breaking down Vince's door to find out what the fuck is going on.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Very well documented. I remember at the time there were people all, when the Wrestling with Shadows thing came out, and people were, Brett's wife called Triple H Hunter. She didn't call him Paul. It's like, well, duh. That was like their hard evidence that it was all set up.
So do you call Brian Super Chico whenever you see him?
No.
Like, you know, I hear plenty of wrestlers, like, in real life, like they'll call, like, somebody will call Raven in real life, you know? Just
mm-hmm.
Or they'll call Sandman Hack or something like that, you know? Just, it ain't that big of a deal.
Yeah. So, let me see here. WrestleMania 14, the Fleet Center in Boston, March 28th, 1998, the Steve Austin pinned WWF World Champion Shawn Michaels to win the title 20 minutes and 2 seconds by catching the champion's foot in the middle of a super kick and then hitting a stunner.
And Mike Tyson lit in there and gave the count.
Yes, Mike Tyson was basically the outside enforcer who had been part of DX. And slid in there and counted the pin and tore off his shirt and to reveal a Stone Cold T-shirt and punched Michaels in the mouth. And that's the last we saw of Shawn Michaels for 4 years.
Mm-hmm. That also day, here and there, but as a wrestler.
That day, I lost my smile.
And the war was changed, or what do you call it? The war was...
Monday Night War.
Yeah.
It was like... I remember it was like 2 or 3 weeks later when the WWF got the first victory in like 2 years over Nitro, when they were teasing... They were saying they were going to do a Vince McMahon-Steve Austin match and teased it the whole show. And remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mostly.
And, yeah, this was the first victory by WWF in, like, 80 weeks or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah, and then it still switched a few more times. It wasn't like a total changeover. It was a few more times, and then it was a changeover, and then it slowly just started separating because one product was getting fucking awesome and the other product was getting shit.
Just repetitive and just stale. The same shit. I mean, just still doing that NWO stuff. But the only thing they had was Goldberg. And they fucking killed him. So.
Yeah. So this leads us into the Attitude Era. We had King of the Ring 1998. Pittsburgh, PA at the Civic Arena. June 28th, Kane defeated the WWF World Champion Steve Austin in a first blood match to win the title after The Undertaker accidentally hit Austin with a chair. The Undertaker came to the ring to stop the interference of Mankind. Had Kane not won the title, he would have set him on fire.
Himself
on fire, that's right. My bad.
But how would we know Kane was bleeding? He had a fucking full-on mask.
It was a trickle of blood coming down.
Yeah.
Okay. But didn't this, like, title reign only last, like, a night?
Didn't it what?
Didn't, like, he lose it the next night?
Yeah.
Great.
I just remember poor in that main event of that King of the Ring that Steve Austin came at, poor Mankind had to come out there and do a run-in.
Yeah.
After going through all that bullshit and that Hell in a Cell match. Mm-hmm. Send this fucker to the hospital, please. You know?
Oh, that's right. That's fucking right. I forgot about that, dude. Yeah, I can't believe that. Yeah, you talk about crazy. That's crazy right there.
I think the deal was that Undertaker actually meant to hit Steve Austin with the chair because he wasn't going to let his brother set himself on fire. So.
Mm-hmm. So Raw is War, June 29th, 1998, the Gun Arena in Cleveland, Ohio. Steve Austin pinned world champion Kane with a stunner to win the title 8 minutes and 28 seconds. After the bout, The Undertaker, who appeared at ringside midway through the bout, came into the ring and sustained another stunner from Austin.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it says. Title was held up in a controversial three-way match on September 27th in which both The Undertaker and Kane pinned Austin, as well as a rematch on October 18th in which Undertaker and Kane fought to a no contest.
Yeah, it was like the match last night with Rude and Aries and Bad Influence. I don't know if you watched that.
I did not.
With James Storm as the referee. And he called it a no contest. So, that was kind of. And that was, you remember Vince said if Austin didn't call it right down the middle and raise the winner's hand, then he was going to be fired, and he fired him. And then Austin showed up with his arsenal of weapons in his truck the next night on Raw.
That when he kidnapped
him? He kidnapped Vince, who was in the wheelchair. And he held a gun to his head, and Vince pissed himself.
Okay.
He said bang 316 when it was a pop gun.
That
mm-hmm.
was an awesome episode of Raw.
Yeah.
Jesus, that was awesome.
That was good.
Wasn't Mick going to protect him, but he just got so sick of Mick that he kicked him out too?
I can't remember. I thought he just yelled at him or something. I'm not sure. Remember Austin had like an M16 out there in his truck. Why has nobody called the law?
Why would you? All right.
Remember, and Shane McMahon had re-signed him. What the deal was?
Okay. All right. Survivor Series 1998, the St. Louis, Missouri, at the Kiel Center. November 15th, a 14-man one-night tournament was held to determine a new champion. Prior to the finals, The Rock...
Awesome show. This is an awesome show because it was a debut or the return to the WWE of Dwayne Gill.
Yep.
That's why it was good. Okay.
Yeah, it was.
The Rock defeated Big Boss Man Ken Shamrock... and The Undertaker, while Mankind defeated Dwayne Gill, Al Snow, and Steve Austin. The Rock
and I love how they set up the whole thing, because you set it up where The Rock is the babyface and he's fighting Vince's henchmen, and then you got how they're manipulating Al, like the way they stole Mr. Socko and they wrap him around Ted's head, you know, so he'd be angry at his friend Al Snow and kick his ass. And then, you know, of course they brought in Dwayne Gill for him to fight in the first round, and it was like total setup for Vince to help Mick win, and then in the end they threw in the big, big swerve and went the other way.
Yeah, I love the finish of this match when he puts him in the sharpshooter and they do the Montreal screw job. It's actually the one time I thought that doing that finish again actually meant something. It was actually good.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
And everybody was into The Rock at this time. I mean, he was gotten to be one of the most popular guys in the company. So when he turned around and became a heel, he's like, oh, you fucker. You son of a bitch.
Yeah, because you get to the point where sometimes you can try and turn the guy heel, and they try to turn Austin heel in Houston, and it just kind of didn't work.
Yeah.
So that couldn't happen here, but because it was it was so good the way they did it, and it was Mick Foley. I mean, it actually worked where everyone turned on him, and then it made Mick Foley a super baby face after that.
I remember Shane McMahon he was still like a baby face, and then he was gonna count Mick Foley down when Austin had him beaten and gave him the double middle fingers.
Yeah,
that was good stuff. Then the next night on Raw, Judge Mills Lane made the rematch with The Rock and Steve Austin. I don't know how he had the authority, but he did. Nobody knows what I'm talking about. Never mind.
December 29th, 1998, Worcester, Mass. Centrum. Raw is War. This was actually taped because Eric Bischoff tried to give away the finish of the match on his show. Of course, in doing so, everybody flipped the channel.
Mankind, sure did.
Mankind pinned the WWF World Champion, The Rock, in a no DQ match in 8 minutes and 48 seconds. DX was part of the celebration at the end and hoisted Mankind up on their shoulders after the victory. So, yeah.
That was a surprise. I wouldn't expect Mick Foley to be the champion at that point in time.
Yeah, it was a surprise. And like I say, it was awful just because fucking the thing with Eric Bischoff telling everybody what was happening and everyone actually changed it. Like, how could they fucking not think that was going to fucking attract viewers? I mean, you know what?
Yeah.
So what if you're live and it's a tape show? It's still a title change. It still means something. And
it was the same night as the finger poke of doom at the Georgia Dome.
Yeah, look, I mean, basically, if you can look like I say, you know, after like that one WrestleMania, they kind of switched a few times, but this is the point where basically the war's over that night. That night the war was over.
Pretty much so. I mean, they were going downhill fast at that point.
Mm-hmm.
They never recovered from it.
This will probably be our last one, Royal Rumble 1999, Anaheim, California, at the Arrowhead Pond. January 24th, The Rock defeated WWF Champion Mankind at 21 minutes and 47 seconds in an I Quit match, following a dozen or so, maybe more, chair shots to the head while Mankind's hands were cuffed behind his back.
Unprotected.
Absolutely brutal.
Yeah. Unprotected chair shots to a head that had already had a vagina cut into it.
Okay. In front of his children.
Yeah, in front of his children and wife, who were screaming and yelling and crying and had to leave the show. And that really is one of the most devastating things I've ever seen. But I remember watching it and just being just glued to my seat. I mean, at the time, it was, like, so awesome. And then later on, when you watch Beyond the Mat, it's like the whole match has, like, new meaning, and it's like, oh,
mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah. That's
cool. And now after all the concussion stuff, you feel like an asshole for getting into
it. Yeah.
But I tell everyone, go back, watch Beyond the Mat, and before the match, when, you know, you see Austin saying hello to the wife and all that, you're going to see the doctor and Nick constantly fucking touch his side of the head where that vagina ended up being. And I swear to God, I'm pretty sure that thing was there before the match started, and they were planning for him to have a lot of juice that night.
Maybe we need to get Jesse Ventura on this conspiracy.
Mm.
Maybe. But I'm serious.
Yeah,
watch it. I swear to God, you will see them mess with his head that whole pre-show.
Did he go back into the lift?
maybe.
Yeah.
Yes. So, head throughout the plugs. We got just a few minutes left.
We got like 5 minutes. Calm down. Everyone check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download the streamer show at AngryMarks.com, along with a lot of other shows, so check out AngryMarks.com. You can also listen to our show at blogtalkradio.com/Contrere, and you can listen to older shows at blogtalkradio.com/Edward-Laredo. You can follow me at Twitter at Ed in San Antonio, and you can follow me on Facebook at Ed in San Antonio or Edward Laredo. So, you know, retweet and repost our shows.
Mm-hmm.
Help us out.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Proper Jam. That's my last name, but it's Proper. Proper Jam. And let me think here. Oh, yeah. I got an update on our shirts from Figure 4 Online.
I was going to ask you about that. You never told me where to send the money.
No, don't worry.
Okay.
I'll get your money. don't worry about that, brother. Anyway, they should be in late next week. I've already gotten a couple of panicked people wondering where their shirts are. The fact of the matter is, I don't even have them yet. But they should be here late next week, or at least that's what I've been told. And also, so just be patient with me. Also, check out teamviggity.com for all your nutrition and weight loss needs. And that's all I've got.
Well, Katrina, do you have any plugs?
Yeah, you can go to my YouTube channel at youtube.com/Katrina. I got a bunch of old stuff up there. Just put in, I got a new playlist having to do with Missy Hyde up there.
Oh, nice.
Missy's Manners that she did when she was in the WWF for like a month in 1987.
Yeah.
That never aired. I don't know if you guys have seen any of those. But
I have not seen that, but I remember going to a house show and picking up a program, and they actually had an interview with her in the program, and it's the only thing I ever saw on Missy Hyatt in the WWE.
Yes, interviews like Bobby Heenan and Harley Race, Randy Savage and Elizabeth. See, I mean, she had an Elizabeth in the same place at the same time, and they're both hot. Tara, Strike Force. I think that's about it. Also got, there's about a 10-minute home movie up there. Not that kind of home movie, but there's a home movie of when she still was married to Eddie Gilbert. I think this was at her house or at her mom's house or something. But it's like 10 minutes of Eddie Gilbert and Paul Heyman playing with their dog in the pool in a home movie. It's kind of wild to watch.
Did I tell you guys that me and Missy have made up and we're buddies again?
Is that right?
I thought this happened like 2 or 3 years ago when the split happened.
I mean, time heals all wounds.
Oh, I know. Are we going to have her on the show pretty soon?
I don't know. I'll ask.
Hey, they haven't made up that much, Greg.
I'll just email her, dude. It's no big deal. If she wants to be on the show, she'll talk to me because she actually likes me.
Well, I told you we're cool, but yeah, it's probably better. She'd probably be able to read it better. But speaking of your playlist, Katrina, I was actually on your page today, and I go and I'm scrolling to see what I can watch, because I had to go back and finish watching the Madison Square Garden show I had started the other day. And then I see a playlist for Japanese matches. And I click on the playlist thinking, wow, there might be some cool shit. There's one fucking Japanese match in there.
Oh, I was going to put some in there. And that was when you were sending me some of those. That's some, I don't know, some Japanese women or something. And I already had the playlist made and then go back and change the name. So, sorry you got your hopes up and they were dashed.
Yeah, well, that's twice a day you kind of missed.
There was still some good stuff in there. You know there was.
Yeah. I'll tell
you
so much
stuff. Don't be that snob. There's some good Mid-South and Memphis shit in there. You go back there and watch that. Quit watching that Japanese stuff that poisons your mind.
Yeah. makes you think everything's
up.
But why is so much of the stuff, like, because I know you're not actually posting it, you're, like, putting links. Why does most of that shit get deleted?
Because people have to have them taken down because they don't have copyrights to it.
Right.
Oh, okay. So there's, like, so there'll be some playlists where you'll have, like, all the videos, everything's there, and then there'll be some where there's, like, maybe 2 and 20 deleted. It's like, damn, I wonder what the fuck this shit was.
It was just copyrighted stuff that WWE would get taken down or something.
Yeah. So I've been, like, a while back, you had some awesome role class that got deleted.
Yeah.
Oh, well. That sucks. But anyway, are we going back to our normal time next week, Craig?
As far as I know, I'm actually going to be in California for most of next week. We'll see.
What are you doing in California?
I'm going on...
God. Don't tell me you're going to a Pearl Jam concert.
No, I'm actually taking a family vacation.
Especially going to Hawaii.
Yeah, that was the plan. And then my dad came down with cancer, and he said he wanted to take the grandkids to Disneyland. So
it's like a whole... Oh, that's cool. That's like the whole family going. That's actually pretty cool.
Where'd you take your wife for your anniversary?
BJ's Brew House.
Yeah, and way to upstage Leonard Storm. You know, he was all proud. 19 years, and then the next day, Craig's all, oh, well, we got 20.
Yeah, that's not my fault. Yeah.
You make love to her afterwards?
Passionately.
Dad, I ask, it was your anniversary. I would hope you would.
I'm actually surprised he answered that.
Anyway.
All right.
I'm off. I gotta run. I gotta get out of here. I got a concert to go to. So check out my Twitter, and I'll post some amazing pictures of the evening tonight. So, and I'll tell Junior Horseman that you send your love.
Oh yeah, give the short dude a hug for me.
All right, I'm out. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right. Hey, Katrina, did you have anything else you want to talk about? I guess he hung up before even Craig did, so I guess I will just end the show. And I guess we'll let you guys know what time the show is next week. And hopefully Katrina will actually understand what 7 o'clock means. That 7 o'clock means 7 o'clock and that 6 o'clock. And that's waking up when I'm sound asleep and almost made me had a heart attack. But anyway, what can I say? It's not easy being the world's greatest podcast host, especially when you got co-hosts like mine. But anyway, everybody got to come back next week, and we will talk to you then.
To be the man, you got to beat the man.
You want to find out how good you are? You're looking at the man's shit. Let's go hook him up. Tonight.